I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from
chaos on campus after Kyle Rittenhouse's presentation came to an abrupt end.
The University of Memphis says that Rittenhouse had the venue booked from 7 to 9 p.m., but just before 8 o'clock, his security team abruptly removed him from the stage. Around that same time, a massive student protest happening outside took a turn.
President Joe Biden's administration is changing its plan for vehicle emission standards. The new plan will give automakers more time to grow their electric vehicle production. The emission standards will also be phased in more slowly than the Biden administration first proposed.
The Department of Justice announced a new antitrust lawsuit against Apple. After a years-long investigation, the suit alleges that Apple created a monopoly on the smartphone market by blocking its competitors from accessing certain iPhone features.
In a recent Marist poll on the 2024 election, registered North Carolina voters favor Trump over Biden by 3%, which is within the margin of error.
Biden was slightly weaker in the rural counties, but it was the opposite for Trump. He won 76% of the vote in the Phoenix metro counties of Maricopa and Pinal and 75% in Pima, but his performance in the rural northern and southern counties was at or above 85%.
The Secretary of State, Antony Blinken, is now back in the Middle East, pushing to secure an immediate ceasefire.
This new resolution, according to Secretary Blinken, would call for an immediate ceasefire tied to the release of the hostages.
U.S. congressional leaders from both parties are working to sell their members on a $1.2 trillion funding package to keep the government open past midnight tomorrow.
It's been a week of back and forth rulings on Senate Bill 4. Yesterday, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals started hearing the arguments that are going to shape where this fight goes next. For now, the next hearing is scheduled for April 3rd.
Texas has a right to defend ourselves, and we will use that authority to declare an invasion and fight back against that invasion.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily, powered by us here at Washington, D.C. We are live. We've got breaking news. Today is March 21st, 2024, Anno Domini. A scoop here at exclusive to Human Events Daily. The House Oversight Committee has officially launched an investigation into the Transition Integrity Project. We've got the letter from Congressman Pete Sessions' office. Sessions, of course, the chairman of the Subcommittee on Government Operations and Fiscal Work. And this, folks, we're going to have Mike Benz on in a minute. We're going to have Raheem Kassam on later. This is everything that we've been talking about since the Republicans took back the House. This is identifying a key actor for the first time, going after them. This is a records, by the way, a records request. That means, guess what? You are officially on notice, Transition Integrity Project. Do not press the shredder button. You're going to have to put all of this forward. They're specifically going into the activities of the Transition Integrity Project in 2020, any similar endeavors in 2024. The fact that the exercise was administered adjacent to the Georgetown University Law Center, as you are reading from the letter now, as you know, Georgetown University operates as a 501c3 nonprofit organization, receives hundreds of millions in federal funding, and it would be highly inappropriate for a university that relies on federal funding to conduct partisan political activity. They're seeking to gain a specific and comprehensive understanding of the 2020 Wargaming Project. Full list of staffers, full list of staff, consultants, anyone who organized the project. We know there are over 100 participants, but only 15 names have come out. Every single one of them. And, oh, by the way, every single participant that may have now or at the time a U.S. national security clearance. Oh, a security clearance. Whether or not funding was spent on this. And it's naming names. This is sent directly from the Oversight Committee, from Sessions' office, to Rosa Brooks, the dean of the center at Georgetown University. And it's also asking a lot of questions about Mary McCord, Professor Mary McCord. By the way, this is all transcripts, all audio, all video, all Zoom, all digital. Any recordings, any records that the Transition Integrity Project have must be turned over to Congress. And if they don't, Congress will then begin issuing subpoenas. And we all know what happens to people who fail to respond to those subpoenas from congressional committees. Why don't you go ask Peter Navarro that? Because he's sitting behind bars right now. Mary McCord, executive director of ICAP over there at the Georgetown University, she comes up in this quite a bit, trying to end the civilian leadership over the military. No. Sorry, Mary. All of that is about to come due. Mike Benz joins us next. Massive, absolutely sprawling investigation of the Transition Integrity Project in Georgetown has just begun. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live. The most important election in the history of the United States is just a few short months away. And today's Human Events Daily sponsor, Patriot Mobile, wants to celebrate with a special offer just in case you haven't made the switch yet. Until March 31st, you can get a free month of service when you switch to Patriot Mobile. Take advantage of this unprecedented offer. All you have to do is go to patriotmobile.com/poso and use promo code SPRING24. That's it. It's that easy. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major systems, all three major networks, and you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message, just like we all did on Super Tuesday, that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military veterans and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. So keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Your team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Get your free month of service today, patriotmobile.com/poso. Get a free month of service when you use promo code SPRING24. patriotmobile.com/poso, patriotmobile.com/poso. Guys, this investigation, what we're looking into, this is something that a lot of people, Raheem Kassam over at the National Pulse, one of the first people that clued me onto it, then another guy who came around, Mike Benz, the Foundation for Freedom Online, has been digging into these people in this group specifically for a long time. Now they're finally on the back foot. Mike Benz joins us now. Huge news. I'm sure you knew that this was kind of circulating. It's now been broken out. Transition Integrity Project, Georgetown, has just been essentially served. They're being asked to preserve and then turn over all records related to the Transition Integrity Project and this new project regarding civilian control of the military and eliminating the ability of government to take care of the military. Mike, walk us through what this investigation is going to look like and what the Transition Integrity Project is.
Well, this is incredible. I'm actually just learning right now that they've been served with the subpoena, evidently. This is all breaking to me. But the Transition Integrity...
I think it's records request first. The subpoena will be next.
Amazing.
If they don't comply.
This really gets into the heart of darkness of the deep power structures within the U.S. government and what was really... Trump was really up against all along. The Transition Integrity Project, TIP, was a group of about 60 to 70 apex predators of the national security state, the foreign policy establishment, the blob, and their political opportunists on both sides of the aisle, representing the donors and drafters as well on the outside. This was basically a plot probably the cleanest thing we've ever seen in this country to a domestic color revolution planning crew. This was a group where, you know, just to name a few of them, you know, they put out in June 2020 a blueprint document for how to stop Trump from being inaugurated, even if he won the 2020 election. You know, at the time they were terrified that Donald Trump was going to beat Joe Biden. They had just cooked up this mail-in ballot scheme, but they weren't totally sure it was going to work. This is 5 months before the election. So they put out a document with, it was a 17-page document with four different scenarios in there of what to do in the event of an election crisis. And scenario three was a, quote, clear Trump win, which was what if Trump wins the Electoral College? What can we do in control of the army? What can we do in control of state governorships? What can we do in control of all these little turnkey anarcho-tyranny groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa in order to bring the country to a halt, to destabilize it as if this were Yugoslavia and induce basically a crisis where Trump can't operate the government and is forced out of office in the same way we ran Slobodan Milosevic out of the country, in the same way they ran Viktor Yanukovych out of Ukraine. And in this document, they specifically contemplated doing favors for what they called, you know, racial justice activists. This is Black Lives Matter street muscle. This is just 1 month after the George Floyd riots broke out. What could the Joe Biden campaign do to do favors for Black Lives Matter to make sure that Black Lives Matter was responsive to calls to take to the streets from the Joe Biden campaign? Now, you know who role-played Joe Biden in this TIP simulation? John Podesta. John Podesta, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, and the man who is now the head of the largest slush fund in the federal government, a $370 billion energy slush fund with strange tentacles into the State Department that the House Republicans have been trying to get more information on because they've been shielding John Podesta from congressional inquiries. And, you know, who's role playing Donald Trump in this scenario was a combination of Bill Kristol and David Frum, both of whom are tightly intertwined in the national security state's interplay with the media. David Frum over at The Atlantic, former George Bush speechwriter, and Bill Kristol, who's kind of the mouthpiece of the neocon CIA right. And so you had basically a coterie of four-star generals, CIA folks. Rosa Brooks was in charge of TIP. Rosa Brooks was a high-ranking Pentagon official with the CIA blue badge. She was parked out of Georgetown. This was basically a CIA, DOD, bipartisan blob hit job for how to cause a domestic color revolution in the United States. We've never seen anything like this in our country. The fact that it's being exposed now by Congress potentially is really catching the tiger by the tail, and I can't wait to see what comes next in this.
And this is really incredible because not only are they going, they're going after the specifics, all the dirty details, all the dirty laundry. They're asking for the names, anyone with security clearance who was involved, any documents that were produced, any Zoom calls, any phone calls, any transcripts, any digital recordings. All of that has to be frozen as of, and I'm told that this was sent over to Georgetown just a few hours ago. Everyone's hearing this for the first place. Mike knows, I didn't even send him a copy of it beforehand because of the sensitivity here. And then really what they're drilling down on is this Mary McCord, who folks will remember. Mary McCord was one of the chief deputies of who? Robert Mueller and Andrew Weissman during all of Russiagate. Mary McCord is now over at Georgetown and has most recently, so that was 2020, and of course, the nullification project of all of 2017 going into 2018 to prevent Trump and the administration from actually having their agenda put forward in government. This is what they're completely obsessed with, and they're bringing it back again because they've said this bizarre NBC article, but it's actually not bizarre if you understand the playbook, because they're trying to bring this up again to say, even if Trump does win, we are going to prevent him from being able to apply the Insurrection Act. And it's like, well, wait a minute. The Insurrection Act? What uprising are you talking about? He hasn't won the election yet. The election hasn't even been conducted as far as we know. This isn't talking about January 6th. Mike, what are they talking about when they talk about the Insurrection Act here?
Well, this is what the end stage of a color revolution looks like. It looks like hundreds of thousands of U.S.-funded NGO Rent-A-Riot street muscle taking to the streets, overrunning the police, and running the elected officers out of office, occupying the federal buildings, bringing the instruments of executive governance to a grinding halt. And so the way to contain that traditionally is through basically bringing in the army to defend the government against large-scale destabilization techniques like that. This is how Lukashenko stopped the attempted U.S. color revolution in Belarus in 2020. This is what countries around the world have been forced to essentially do to fight off State Department open society color revolution type tactics. They know that they're going to do this again. They know that the only way to stop that is by essentially bringing in the National Guard or something to that effect. So what they want to do is pre-block the ability to do that so that they can overrun Washington, D.C. and run Trump out of office.
And so, but here's what I'm basically saying. Doesn't that make this a threat? Doesn't that then make this essentially them telling the president or just telling everybody out there, really the powers that be throughout Washington? The next, of course, will be the Atlantic Magazine article saying something along the lines of, you know, it's time to end those outdated notions of civilian control of the military, the institutions that run the military, the interagency, right? The interagency must maintain power within Washington. Mike, of course, always calls it the blob, but here within the Beltway, they call it the interagency, and you must always bow down to the interagency. A couple of minutes till the break, Mike Benz.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. You know, I mean, this is the military basically saying, hey, the civilians, if they're left in control of the military, they might actually do what the voters want. And this is the overworld class. This is the class that has the national security clearances and is currently in occupation of the military, saying, actually, we don't have to answer to you. We have the guns. We also have the Justice Department on our side. And we've got this Department of Dirty Tricks that we can deploy legally to be able to stop you from stopping us. And so, you know, that's kind of what this story is boiling up to. As I sort of, reflect back on this, I mean, this is the heart of Russiagate. This is the heart of the Ukraine impeachment. This is the foreign policy overclass who is terrified that domestic citizens, domestic voters, might vote to change their foreign policy for personal profit schemes, might focus on making this country great, not necessarily their foreign interests in foreign countries, their foreign interests in Ukraine, their foreign interests in Latin America, their foreign interests in the Middle East or in Southeast Asia. And, they want to stop us from stopping them. And that's what TIP is essentially all about. It's a military rule.
We've been looking at this for a long time. Ron Paul says it goes back to Dealey Plaza, 1963. We'll be back with Mike Benz.
Hey, you talk about influencers. These are influencers. And they're friends of mine, Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack?
Great job. All right, Jeff Posobiec back live. Folks, a lot to be nervous about there. Open social media, turn on the news. All you see is crime, societal decay. A lot of people just run out. Go ahead, buy a gun, and then leave it in a safe. And if there's ever an emergency, they're not going to be prepared, and they run the risk of hurting themselves or others. No way around it. You need to train and do so often. Unfortunately, we know that training is time-consuming. Getting to the range, assuming there's even one nearby, ammo prices are through the roof because of Bidenflation. Well, iTarget Pro was invented so that you could practice anytime in the safety and convenience of your own home. Simply download the iTarget Pro app, load your caliber-specific laser bullet into your firearm, and start training. You can practice alone, compete with friends, use to safely train friends and family, or new to firearms. Go to itargetpro.com and get 10% off with promo code POSO. This is the smartest, safest way to train, which is why competitive shooters trust dry fire training on part of their regimen. Get yours today. That's the letter itargetpro.com, itargetpro.com, promo code POSO. I got to tell you, out of all the stuff that we talk about on the show, this is the one I get asked about. What is that thing, the laser bullet thing? It's iTarget Pro, itargetpro.com, promo code POSO. Mike Benz back on. Mike, talk to me about the importance of the fact that the Republicans are actually opening investigation into something that could have a real impact on 2024, the fact that there will now be finally an official investigation into anything regarding the censorship industrial complex, and the fact that this now gives people like yourselves, people like us, people like Darren Beatty at Revolver, Raheem Kassam, National Pulse, now it gives them a backstop to be able to dig in as we get closer to the election.
Yeah, this was really the magic of the Russiagate special probe for 2.5 years that dogged the Trump administration. This, in that case, they had nothing. In this case, we essentially have everything. We have a smoking gun case on every front, including firsthand confessions and source documents of them all confessing their dirty deeds. But even when, there was this in-process set of congressional hearings and special investigations in Russiagate, when they had nothing, it still was very effective at applying a lot of friction to the White House, incurring legal costs, being faced with a media storm, being constantly subpoenaed for their communications, targeting things at a network level rather than just a one-off individual. And that causes a lot of friction in the machinery of the target. In this case, it's the blob. It is the blob that brought all of these, BS, legal indictments, that orchestrated the fake impeachment, that sicked the 9/11 FBI director on the sitting president. In this case, this has been very effective in taking on the censorship industry, combining congressional hearings with investigations, with congressional reports, with congressional subpoenas, requiring the freezing of records and the turning over of records. And even when they delete the records, that creates a new wave of scandals, because that is an implicit confession to the crime. When you have these situations like the Department of Homeland Security conducting censorship requests via Signal, encrypted chat, doing things that should have been FOIA-able. When you have situations like Hillary Clinton with the bleach bit affair of, deleting things using special techniques because it would lead to a criminal indictment otherwise, you can bet that TIP is going to be doing a similar thing. I mean, the idea that these people who were the same folks around that bleach bit nonsense with Hillary Clinton would retain all their records is something I find hard to believe, but forcing them to say on record, oh, you know what, the dog ate my confession notes and the digital dog ate my emails, force them to say that. And this thing should stretch months and years. What TIP did is 10,000 times a bigger crime than whatever was alleged of 20 of Trump's lawyers in the RICO investigation in Georgia. If that was a plot around electors to overturn an election, then TIP had the mother of all criminal RICO plots. They straight up said in their own formation documents there, clear Trump win, send alternate electors to stop inauguration, plan acts of effective terrorism to have street muscle obstruct the operations of the federal government. Gee, where have I heard obstruction of a federal proceeding before? That was the entire impetus for the felony charges around January 6th. Every single one of these TIP members who participated in that or took an affirmative act in furtherance of that. Remember, all you need for a conspiracy is agreement and a single act in furtherance. They are all in agreement with those source documents of TIP. So if there's one email that shows an affirmative action in furtherance of that, there's one email to a Black Lives Matter coordinator liaison, that's 10 years for obstruction. That's another 10 years for conspiracy. For every single one of them, everything that was done to the Trump world legal folks in Georgia can be brought immediately against the folks around TIP. If just a single one of those follow-up emails or text communications show a single act in furtherance, and knowing these people, there's not a snowflake's chance in hell that they came up with this sophisticated document, spent 3 days in the hot summer of D.C. to plan all this, and then did absolutely nothing about it. That's not how these people work.
Well, and in addition to that, too, to your point, the actual going after them, really giving this thing teeth, that's not going to happen while Merrick Garland is in charge of the Department of Justice. But what they're able to put together this year, number one, you can freeze in place a lot of these people and it would create all of that friction that you're talking about and make it very hard for them to run these same types of operations. If you know you've got congressional investigators rooting around in their emails, rooting around. And I don't, by the way, Georgetown, great. Go after Georgetown. That really is the nerve cell. But if they find anything else, Stanford, Harvard, any other of these places that are getting involved, wrap them into it as well. Go after every single one of them. And then the minute that the new DOJ comes in, you hand the report right back to them under President Trump. I don't know, people have said maybe Mike Lee becomes the attorney general. Maybe it's Ted Cruz, whoever it is, whoever the new base attorney general, Mike Davis in his first 30 days as acting AG, hand it over to him and say, this is who you go after. Mike Benz.
You might not even need to wait, though. Let's just say one of those. They were planning these destabilization operations all around the country. Yeah, this is just like the BLM riots. I mean, these were in there were 500 discrete riots in essentially every state in the union. You know, even red states, there would be these blue pocket cities that they would orchestrate these out of. Let's just say, for example, that TIP reached out to some Antifa or BLM affiliate. We know they literally were plotting to engage BLM and do favors for them so that BLM would take to the streets. We know that there's Black Lives Matter Facebook pages and these, you know, the top four or five lieutenants in that that were very close to the Biden campaign. Let's just say there was an email to them, you know, in the state of Missouri. Well, Missouri State Attorney General can take immediate action on something like that at the state level, just as they did in Georgia against Trump. You know, this is something
this is the Missouri case right now before the Supreme Court.
Right, right. What I'm saying is there are a lot of these purple states that have Republican governors. If just a single one of these emails or texts involved a TIP person making outreach to an outside organization, that's one step in furtherance. You already have agreement. So once you have the step in furtherance, now you got conspiracy. You can bring that to the state level. You don't even need to wait for Merrick Garland to untwist his attachment to the Biden White House.
And it's as simple as that. This is the reason they use cutout organizations like this, like Georgetown and others, and they have all the way back since, this is BlueAnon. This is the BlueAnon days of where the Russiagate conspiracy was birthed in 2016, 2017. It was all Georgetown. And they use Georgetown as well as a revolving door. Someone will be in government, someone will be working for one of these special investigations, then they go back to some position over at Georgetown, they've got some law position, whatever it is, they use some color of academia to whitewash all of it, and then they go right back into government when they have the opportunity, or they sit there and they write their pieces, working with Weissman, working with Eisen, Mary McCord, so many others, to be able to come up with their ideas of which way to go forward. This has been what you, Mike Benz, and so many others have been pulling apart in bit by bit, inch by inch. And now it's as far as I know, this may be the first time we've actually seen someone going after one of them directly. This isn't just like when the Weaponization Committee was going after the FBI and CIA and DHS. This is actually going after one of the cutout organizations by name. Mike, have you seen anything like this in your work?
Well, this is the mother of them, in a sense. This is why I'm a little bit blown away and really excited to dig into what the actual documents, what the actual requests look like, because everything else has been sort of skating around this. Even the censorship industry, investigations are wrapped up in the TIP affair. You see, TIP was operating for this domestic color revolution plan at the same time that EIP was carrying out the election censorship that TIP said would be necessary in order to carry off this domestic color revolution. See, EIP was the Election Integrity Partnership. TIP was the Transition Integrity Project. EIP and TIP have a scary amount of overlap in terms of what they were doing, in the sense that TIP said, listen, we need to treat this like Eastern Europe, how we get rid of foreign dictators. And part of the way we need to do this is to control the media. And so they had two related organizations. One of them was called the National Task Force on Election Crises. That Jim Baker was in charge of that. Jim Baker was the former FBI FBI general counsel or assistant general counsel, who then left at the FBI in the summer of 2020 to become the general counsel for Twitter under Jack Dorsey, with Vijaya Gadde and Joel Roth there. And they basically had the National Task Force on Election Crises, which was corralling the media like cats in order to get them all on a synchronized Mockingbird talking point blueprint for how to talk about the pending Red Mirage Blue Shift election event 5 months later. That is, that was getting
exactly
NBC.
And what happened? The playbook came out. Mike Benz, Foundation for Freedom Online. Go follow him. Mike Benz Cyber, everyone. I'll send over all those documents and all that. And we'll chat offline as well, because this is a sprawling story. We're going to dig into every single inch of it. And actually, for once, go after the people that have been messing with us for so many years.
Jack, where's Jack? Where's Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack Posobiec back live, Human Events Daily, Washington, D.C. Another group that deserves a lot of investigation and is under investigation by the National Pulse is a group called the Midas Touch. Midas Touch are it's left-wing activists, left-wing entertainers, I think they referred to themselves at one point. Raheem Kassam is digging into the Midas Touch network. Raheem, I first heard about these guys, I want to say going 2020, 2021, they were sort of out there by themselves, but then they've sort of just been hiring and agglomerating the worst bottom of the barrel people from Twitter and now X to bring into their network. Like Michael Cohen is working with them now, Ron Filipkowski, that guy who actually got hired by Ron DeSantis and then, got lost a job in complete disgrace when he was fired. So, I mean, why is it that these guys get picked up, and they're able to actually drive so many media narratives? That's what's confusing to me, like this most recent bloodbath hoax.
Yeah, thank you, Jack, and thanks for having me. This is probably, to tie it to your last segment, once we're done with our investigation into Midas Touch, maybe we'll get a strongly worded letter out of a congressman in 4 years' time. Who knows? But barring my snark about how long it's taken for congressional Republicans to do anything about what's going on with Rosa Brooks, Georgetown, and the Transition Integrity Project, I think it's incumbent upon us to delve deeper into the change makers on the left. We always seem to be the ones under investigation, never the ones doing the investigating. And so we have set our faces like flint to look into the background, the origin story, and the current setup of what can only be described, I think, as a cross-platform kind of media conglomerate, which is backed by huge Hollywood money. Which appears to be like wildly whitelisted on Elon Musk's X, whose stuff always goes viral, whose hoaxes never get called out by the corporate media. And I was looking at this a couple of weeks ago and scratching my head, and I just thought, there's no way this is all by chance, that they're hitting all of these things all of the time. And then, of course, you see just a few weeks ago, these Midas Touch guys were invited for a special preview screening of the Biden State of the Union by Anita Dunn in the White House, pressing the flesh. And so I think what's going on here, I suspect, what's going on here is a collaborative effort between the Biden campaign, the DNC, to kind of eat David Brock and Media Matters' lunch, the old school stalwarts of watching Steve Bannon and Jack Posobiec talking and then writing about it, to a more sort of front-footed approach to reshaping the news. And that comes from the constant hoaxes that are peddled by the likes of Midas Touch.
So these Midas Touchers, these guys, these brothers, the Messiahless brothers, mm-hmm. they were back in 2020, I remember even the left was pretty upset at them because they were essentially running what, to my mind, looks, and there's a whole Rolling Stone piece on them, which I also, by the way, I agree with you that when you look at it through the lens of sort of the shifting power structures on the left, David Brock, Media Matters, that is the Clinton operation. That's part of the Clinton machine. Yet these guys, of course, because nobody really wanted to work with Biden. None of the higher level Obama team ever came over to Biden world. They wanted nothing to do with them. That's why he's had to rely on these second stringers and third stringers like Ron Klein and Jeff Zients. But, you know, now, of course, he's stuck dealing with the Midas touchers. And that's why they're going to media. It's because Biden, of course, is pushing for them to run with these narratives, possibly even pressuring them to remove people from access to the White House. Because, of course, he gave these guys a front row seat and pre-access to the State of the Union. Now, it's interesting that, you know, I read Dave Weigel's piece over in Semaphore. Didn't actually say if that was conducted at the House, whether they were brought to the White House. It was a little bit vague as to what the actual machinations of that were. But what I do find very interesting is these guys were gone after by the left originally as being kind of like multi-level marketers, and they were running a grift scheme where a lot of their money was going to these like low dollar TV ad buys, and they were pocketing all the difference by making money off of their own followers. Now, that was 2020. Do you have any indication that they're doing the same thing and they were sort of running this this LLC on the side, or have they changed their ways?
Well, a lot has changed about them in the last several years. As you say, they were operating this LLC that I think was inspired by the movie Step Brothers. They had all of their donations that were being made to them publicly available. You could see who their top givers were, and that included people like Reid Hoffman. I'll remind the audience, Reid Hoffman behind the Fusion GPS lawsuits, behind the E. Jean Carroll lawsuits, behind funding Nikki Haley, and a whole lot more. Now they're starting to go kind of professional on the progressive left. And by professional on the progressive left, it means dark, right? Dark money, dark operations. You don't get to see their donors. You don't get to see how the money flows around. And so that is one of the things that I think sets alarm bells ringing about this organization more than anything else. It's how quick they were to turn around and go, oh, people are paying attention to us. Better hide everything. And so again, as I say, we have set our faces like flint to look into these people. And I've got to tell you, since we announced our investigation into Midas Touch on Monday on the War Room, I've had a number of people who know the Micellus brothers personally, who grew up with them, who grew up around them, who have been in business with them, reach out to me because, I mean, I'll use their words, there's a lot of dodgy stuff around those characters. So we shall see what we uncover. But for a start, we've already started to publish stuff up at the National Pulse on this, and I've got another story going up later today. It links them with Jack Smith. And as you say, when you've got Michael Cohen as one of your leading contributors, when you've got Ron Filipowski, when you've got anonymized Twitter agents who appear to be like hyper boosted on the platform while pushing overt misinformation, then it does warrant looking a little deeper. And I think more people looking into this, more scrutiny, more eyeballs will help. I've described them to my staff when we've been discussing how we're going to go about this. I've discussed them as kind of like the left-wing Breitbart of 2016. Remember, Breitbart stories would go viral all the time, and the left freaked out about it. And I think we need to apply as much scrutiny as to them as they did to us back in 2016 when I worked there.
I it's funny you mention that, because 2016 was before the censorship, the brakes really got turned on. And so Breitbart would go viral every day, not just on Twitter, but on Facebook as well, where they still have a pretty substantial audience, by the way. But we've noticed, and we've all seen it, anyone in the business or anyone who's just been using the platforms, you've seen the traffic drop off. And most importantly, you've seen the fact that you can't seem to reach that trending top 10 on the side anymore. Jack Dorsey had said that was curated at one point. But what's so interesting to me is that guys like Filipowski, the Patriot Takes, they're all part of the same network. this anonymous ASIN character, who's, I believe, his sole job is to take Republicans out of context. In fact, Aaron Rupar, whose name somebody got added to the Urban Dictionary as to Rupar, is to purposely take people out of context. They're able to get their stuff trending. It's almost like they're whitelisted or something at Twitter.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the other part of it that you have to look at here is they're making money off this, right? Yep. Some of them are not verified, but some of them are, and some of them will be getting checks out of X.com for boosting that level of misinformation. Now, you know, for the audience thinking about how all this works, imagine that were me, right? Imagine that was somebody on the political right who is cutting clips out of context and making a bucket load of cash, let alone changing the opinions of things. I mean, I happen to know that Rasmussen has some extraordinary numbers coming out tomorrow on the bloodbath hoax, and I think everybody needs to pay attention to Rasmussen reports tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. To look at the impact that groups like Midas Touch are having. This isn't, you know, just like we did in 2020 with the Transition Integrity Project, August 3rd, I believe it was, when we first started to get into this stuff. Just like
coming
that,
up on our break here, everyone,
they
go,
just need to realize
National
the scale Pulse, of this thing.
Subscribe, understand the scale of this thing. These guys are part of a much, much larger network. Raheem Kassam, as always, has the goods.
Long hours. I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
Jack Posobiec back live. Well, folks, 2024, the general election is in full swing. And guess what? That means BLM and Antifa, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, seemingly nowhere, have returned. Julio Rosas was there with Kyle Rittenhouse last night at the University of Memphis. Julio, tell us what happened, because there's been a lot of claims and counterclaims. I've seen your footage. One of the agitators running around down there with a small child. I mean, this is horrifying. You were there reporting for Frontlines, the Turning Point Project. Tell me what happened.
I mean, yeah. So this was an event being put on by the chapter, the Turning Point chapter at the University of Memphis. And not to say it was mostly peaceful, but things were kind of fine at the beginning. The protesters showed up, as is their right. And the problem was that a lot of the agitators were able to secure tickets to get inside of the event. And Turning Point said that's the university's doing. And that kind of did disrupt the flow of how the event was supposed to go. But things really kind of escalated after the event ended. And so Rittenhouse was already gone. He was already off campus. The video that I got was when the protesters realized that the Turning Point chapter and staff were leaving the building. And so, the law enforcement setup wasn't really that great, obviously, because the crowd just overwhelmed the campus police and started to surround the state troopers that were on hand. And they were shouting, they were trying to attack them. They were trying to attack them. And if it wasn't for the small contingent of officers, it would have gotten pretty bad. And then towards the end, they realized that there's only one exit and entrance to this parking garage. And so they started to run around to that entrance and exit so that they could prevent the Turning Point staff from leaving. And again, it was only because the officers showed up at the last second that they allowed them to push the protesters back and allow the Turning Point people to finally be able to leave.
So when you saw this crowd, predominantly it looks like a Black Lives Matter crowd, obviously some Antifa members as well. What's shocking to me, though, is that these types of groups have been very quiet for years. And now all of a sudden, we shift back into general election mode and they're there again. Did you get any sense of the organization? Did you get any sense of leaders or any named groups that were behind organizing this response?
Yeah, the NAACP chapter was there. The Black Student Associations was there. Even some professors of the University of Memphis, they showed up and said that we're faculty, we're against what's being allowed to happen. So I would say it was mostly students, and there was also some alumni that were also present as well. But I mean, yeah, this is an election season, and obviously 2020 was kind of the worst example of what these groups can do. And you're right, they went away, but they didn't disappear. And what I mean by that is that because they didn't face any major repercussions because of the actions of what they did now 4 years ago, they have no reason to not kind of carry out the similar acts this year, because they also know that, you know, law enforcement is not what it used to be in terms of the local and state level. And of course, the federal law enforcement aspect is they're focused on other quote unquote threats. And so the conditions are being set for another potentially, you know, very violent year. It's just a matter of what that kinetic or that what that spark is going to be for them to start going kinetic like in 2020.
Well, and that's precisely it, because they always wait for some event or something that they can take out of context. You, of course, were present in Kenosha that fateful night with Kyle Rittenhouse all the way back in 2020. I remember there's your footage, there's BG's footage, you know, being able to lay out all the different players and figure out what happened, all of which, by the way, of course, came up during Kyle's trial. Now, you got a chance to sit down with Kyle afterwards here. Did you guys reflect on the fact that, you know, this is sort of the second time you've been through the ringer there?
Yeah, we did. It was interesting. That was the first time I actually met Kyle in person. Obviously, I'm very familiar with his story. You know, it's kind of hard for me to not be aware of what happened. But yeah, it's interesting now, because we're going on 4 years, and yet there's still so much of the American population, you know, thanks to the misinformation of mainstream media and politicians, that still very much believe that he's a murderer. There was a guy who was, you know, saying that, oh, he crossed state lines with a rifle. And I had to say, no, that's not what happened. It only crossed state lines after the shooting, because the weapon was bought in Wisconsin. And so even just on the small details, people still very much don't have a clue with what happened. And of course, if they're missing the small details, then they're going to miss on the big important parts of it as well. And there were a lot of people actually that were holding posters and signs honoring Joseph Rosenbaum, Gage Grosskreutz, and Anthony Huber, the guys who attacked Rittenhouse that night and who were shot by him in self-defense. And, you know, when you bring up, well, what about their past? And like, you know, hey, you know, this guy, you know, these weren't good people, even including that night, not even what happened, if, you know, the years prior, but even that night of the incident, you know, they weren't acting, you know, exactly like Good Samaritans. And they would still say, well, Kyle Rittenhouse is a murderer. I mean, that's what they always would fall back to. So, the misinformation is still very prevalent, unfortunately, you know, even though
By the way, I happen to notice some of those pictures that in your reporting, and they were throwing these flyers around inside the room as well. And they had Gage Grosskreutz's name on there as well. And they were holding it up. Great Gage Grosskreutz. He's still alive. Antifa Gage was not killed that night. He's still alive. He actually changed his name, as a matter of fact. I don't know if that's considered dead naming or not. But no, he was not killed. He got like arrested for something. You know, he was in like a hit and run, you know, not long ago. And it was just incredible to me that, again, and not only is the misinformation out there, but as you say, so many of the people, they actually believe, because of the media's treatment of Kyle Rittenhouse's case, they actually think that he killed black people. Just not true. All three of them were white.
Yeah. And it's very insidious in how they did it, because they just say, well, he shot three people at a Black Lives Matter protest. And, you know, people Correct. At the, you know, the casual reader, you know, obviously we're news junkies, so we actually look more into than just past the headlines. But, you know, people who are going about their day, they just might say, oh, through, you know, Black Lives Matter protests. Okay, so that means he shot black people. And of course, it wasn't a protest. It was a riot. I mean, even still, when the local media was talking about this
event, they're doing it. They're doing it. Got to go right at the end. But they're doing it right now with Trump, where they're saying, oh, he said that some migrants are not people. Yeah, he was talking about MS-13. Julio, where can people go to follow you?
I can follow my Substack, mostlypeaceful.live. They can also follow Turning Point Frontlines.
Mostly Peaceful. Good to have you over at Frontlines, getting there and getting the job done. Ladies and gentlemen, today begins the right going on offense. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission. Lay short.